to really get that warm and fuzzy this game.
And I'm going to get some people mad at me right now because this card just shot up when everybody went all in for it.
I'm kind of notorious.
There was a lot of ridiculousness in the room.
Yeah, you've done that. Don't say that you've been accused of it.
That's a fact.
Let me lick it.
Garrick Smash Creature, Garrick Smash Planeswalker.
The preview card that we're going to get to share with you next week.
I learned that my two co-hosts worship a false idol.
Oh, you brave soul, welcome to the next, not necessarily the next best, episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Matt Hurley, and he's Brian Tibbetts. Coming up this evening, was it worth it to cross the ocean to Copenhagen? What went down, legal and otherwise, according to the DCI, in Roanoke over the weekend? And why should you be looking forward to the next few weeks in Magic? We'll cover it all here this evening on Tryhards. Guys, we get it started each week with What Are You Drinking? Brian, you've been lone dad for 24 hours now. What's in the glass to make you feel better?
I am enjoying a Rattler grapefruit malt beverage specialty. This is something I don't get to have very often because Aldi doesn't carry it all that often. They do make this in other brands, but it's so cheap doing it. So it's 40% beer and like 60% grapefruit lemonade to give you a whopping 2% alcohol by volume. So I can go through these things pretty fast. So thankfully they're in like a 17-ounce can. But it is quite refreshing, especially since I've been working outside all day.
Interesting. We'll figure out if that's something you're going to be coming back to throughout the hot summer months. Matt, what are you drinking tonight?
I just about finished it. I just realized because we were BSing so much before the show, just some Woodford on the rocks. I might have to take a break from the show to go get another one.
That's always a good call. We talk about audibles. That's a great audible here on Tryhards. All day IPA in the glass. I didn't have time to run out to the liquor store before the show, integrating the new tech. If you didn't listen to the pre and post show, why don't you think about doing that? You can figure it out on patreon.com/tryhards if that's going to be up your alley. And you'll hear why I am not slumming it, but enjoying it with the all day IPA here this evening. Guys, what Magic did you play? Matt, you were coming off a couple of weeks ago where you got to play quite a bit of Battle Bond. What was on your Magic table this week?
Friday night, we did some Battle Bond, and it was fun. Actually, that's a lie. We did two Battle Bonds. Partner and I lost round one, and we had five pods of four teams, so eight people. Everyone who lost basically said, let's draft again, and they said, okay, as long as you're out by midnight. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad that the core set is coming out very soon. This one will definitely not last forever. It'll be interesting for quite a while and it's fun, but it definitely will not last forever and interest wise.
Why do you say that?
It reminds me a lot of Conspiracy. It'll be interesting for a few weeks, two, three, 4 weeks. And then after that, then it's just going to kind of be like, I'm over this. Let's play a real set type of thing.
Let's play a real set. I like it.
I will not speak badly. It's designed very well. Designed to be a ton of fun, and it's designed to be accessible to casuals, but at the same time it is basically like a fun supplemental set, so you can't do that forever.
Matt was back at the Battle Bond. Brian, did you have to go second verse same as the first? Did you play some Battle Bond this week?
I did not, because the shop has not yet opened, but I am very, very excited to say, gentlemen, that the shop is opening on Wednesday from 2:00 to 9:00. Most of the Magic community, from what I have heard, including some D&Ders, including some Pokemon, including some Yu-Gi-Oh! Players, are all going to descend on the grand reopening of the For the Win in Galesburg this Wednesday and just kind of meet the new owner, Michael Frederick, and to just have open gaming for 7 hours on the first day. So it should be a lot of fun. I'm taking a bevy of things. Standard, I'm taking Modern, I'm taking Tiny Leaders, because that's a thing still. Yeah. Yeah, it is still a thing. And probably some Legacy decks just to see if anybody wants to roll that way. So I am taking the children down, of course, since I am soloing it this week. I told Clara that, hey, if they're doing something, we should get into that. And she's like, yeah, that might be kind of fun. So looking forward to, if they open up a Battle Bond or a draft or something, getting into that with her. I have no idea what the 5-year-old is going to be doing. I'm just going to bring Uno and a couple other games that she loves, and hopefully she won't run out of the store.
The grand reopening. We know the first hour will be spent listening to this episode of Tryhards. when a community becomes revitalized like that, it's always a moment to celebrate. And it sounds like the Galesburg community is going to do it right this Wednesday. I look forward to hearing about that coming up next week here on Tryhards. I didn't get a chance to play this weekend either. The significant other, she had an out-of-town softball tournament. We spent Friday night together. Then I had some other things going on over the weekend and just didn't get a chance to get up to the shop. I'm looking forward to it very soon. I need to get up there, play some more cardboard with some friends of mine. That brings us up to this week's Patreon raffle. We got our first one late in the month here in June, but we're going to get two just as we do each and every month here on Tryhards. Matt, you have put something up for the raffle. What are you putting up?
Given it to me as an idea by No Banless Modern. It's a pack foil matter reshaper.
Still legal in Modern. Some of the lands that make it better, not still legal in Modern. We'll talk a little bit about that later in the show. 51 eligibles tonight. Matt, you have the list in front of you. You're about to pick your own mailing list, so to speak. As I roll, it's actually a randomizer because I don't have a 51-sided die.
What?
Here we go. 43.
It looks like Michael Warren, I believe. Congratulations. He's been a patron between in the $5 range for about a year now. So congratulations, Michael.
All right. Maybe it's going to be a new modern frontier for Michael. Michael, thank you so much for your support of Tryhards. Hope you enjoy it and look forward to that about 6 months from now after Matt's post office eats it twice and he sends a third one out. Should be right on time for you for the holiday season. Fourth quarter, always a great time to get gifts. Gifts were given out to many who were playing standard over the weekend and even a few who dared modern. We'll get to modern in just a moment. But Brian, the lone GP this weekend was in Copenhagen. What was interesting about it?
What's not interesting about Copenhagen? In fact, what's not interesting about Denmark? As I was looking up information about the GP, I found out all these things about Copenhagen. Gentlemen, we're going to have a raffle number two tonight just because we're all about knowledge on the show. I want each of you to choose a number between 1 and 68, and I'm going to give you some mind-blowing information about the country of Denmark.
We're going to need some new hosts if this show is all about knowledge.
Yeah, that's not me.
All right, Earl, you go first. Between 1 and 68.
37.
37. Soccer is Denmark's favorite and national sport. Danish football team became known worldwide through a gutsy performance in the 1986 World Cup. Okay, whatever. That's fine. Sean, what about yours?
I'm going to go lucky number 13.
This is fascinating. Denmark has 7,314 miles of coastline, which is longer than the Great Wall of China and equals almost 1.5 meters of coast per Danish citizen. And one of my favorites, because this tied into our 100th episode, Denmark is an archipelago, my card from the 100th episode, made up of over 100 islands, some of which are not even inhabited. Perhaps if you get enough money, if you can persuade the Danish government to do so, maybe you also can own part of Denmark. 753 players descended on Copenhagen. Format was standard, as Sean said, and lo and behold, guys, something brand new. I can't believe it. Red took it down. There was really nothing else to report about this. There were some interesting decks that I saw, but overall, it was pretty much a very, very red, mono red and red black heavy metagame. A couple of Esper decks, a couple of blue white, mostly approach decks, and an Esper deck that I want to get your opinion on. But we've gotten to the point where we're starting to see how some of these red decks identify themselves. We're seeing now mono red aggro, which has been a thing for a very long time, I understand. But now we're seeing things like mono red flame, red black chain whirler. Does this do anything with those kind of cutesy deck names, or does that just confuse everybody because it's really pretty much an aggro deck early?
I think it's just confusing. There's some differences, like, you know, the chain deck I think is a little bit different. I think it plays out more, a little bit more like a Saffron Olive deck, to be honest.
True.
I think it's just confusing to people. And after looking at these results, there is a little bit of a varied metagame between the different countries and different regions. It is important to pay attention to it, but yes, Mono Red is still reigning supreme, and I have this odd feeling it will until we actually get our rotation here in, 3 months or so.
Sean, what about you? Do you think there's anything to say about differentiating some of these red decks between red black and mono red flame, etc.?
I think there is. And while I get into this for a second, I want you to pick up your list of facts, because I'm going to check you on something here that I can't remember in just a moment. Red is the king of the format right now. And when you say it's red black, that just means they're splashing for it. And we talked about it last week, the activation ability to recur on Scrap Heap Scrounger. They're splashing for an unlicensed Disintegration. They're basically choosing a more resilient deck in which removal is going to let the game go a little bit longer so they can leverage that resilience. Whereas Mono Red really wants the game over, I would say, on one and a half turns earlier on average. So while it's helpful in the parlance of our industry to say red versus red black, make no mistake about it. These are red decks. One's just splashing a couple of cards in order to try to gain an advantage over a certain portion of the metagame. And Brian, we know that red right now is the monarch of Standard. Is Denmark still a monarchy? Am I right there?
Fact number five, the Danish monarchy is the oldest continuing monarchy in the world and has existed for over 1,000 years.
I thought I remembered that to be true. All right. Interesting what happened in Copenhagen, Brian. Not only do you have red sort of stamping its crown on the format, but we started to see some of the vestigial changes. You mentioned the Esper decks that we would eventually see in the Invitational, which was a little bit more widespread with its coverage here in the States.
One name that was kind of a blast from the past that I saw coming in 14th place, Guillaume Wafotapa's Esper Control List, which I thought was just right up my alley. This is something that I would absolutely love to play. It basically looks like the first iteration of the blue-white control list that came out. It's running four Torrential Gear Hulks with the Disallow, Essence Scatter, Glimmer of Genius package, but it's also running four Fatal Push, four Vraska's Contempt, to go along with two Search for Iskantas and 27 lands to also support three Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. Guys, I think for those who think that the blue-white just doesn't have enough tools, maybe this is the list that the true control players can get behind. So your take on this, Sean, what do you think? Obviously, Guillaume Wafotapa, Hall of Famer, he's going to do really, really well regardless of what he's running, but kind of coming out of the woodwork with something like this, Esper Control, do you think this is where we need to be for control players?
The only thing that scares me about Esper Control right now is the mana base. I think a Gearhulk package in order to close out games, because the other decks are so resilient, with Scrap Heap Scrounger able to keep coming back, with Hazoret being indestructible. Yes, you have things like Vraska's Contempt or Seal Away to deal with them, but you're not going to have that every time. And being able to clock them once you take an advantageous position, I think, is a great way to sort of close the game out in a hurry. So I like the Gearhulk package right now. The only thing that scares me, even though I would love to lean toward a black-heavy version of this, is the mana base.
Hurley, what about you? Are you good with Gearhulks and Vraska's Contempt and Fatal Pushes, or do you think blue-black mid-range if you want to go that way?
Gearhulks are still like, eh. I don't know, to be honest. I haven't played enough of this standard. I've watched enough, but I haven't really played enough that I feel like I have a good grasp upon what angle to strike the red decks at. I think I'd have to play a lot more of this format to really get that warm and fuzzy to say, okay, I know how to strike this red deck out and basically just kill him on the spot. Right now, I would say I'm not a big fan of the Gearhulks. I just don't think they're good. I think you're wasting your turn six. But at the same time, I mean, if it's working, they may know something I don't.
The thing that fascinates me about this Esper Control list is that it is eschewing all of the white, shall we say, control cards. It has no Fumigates. It has no Settle the Wreckage. It has no Sealaways. It's really relying on just a ton of permission. Three Syncopates, one Negate, two Essence Scatter, and four Disallows to go along with the Pushes and the Contempts. To take care of things before they even hit the board. So I don't know if that's the right play or not. I kind of like that angle, so you don't have to kind of remain, you know, kind of leave your white mana untapped. The only white in the entire deck is really for Teferi. And that, to me, I think is probably a very, very interesting play. There's one Forsake the Worldly coming out of the board. I'd like to run this list and see how it would do up against maybe another control list, or against definitely the big red menace.
There is a movement right now toward black. And it's a movement that I'm getting behind because, and I'm going to get some people mad at me right now because this card just shot up when everybody went all in for it. The more I watch Standard and the better players you play against, Settle the Wreckage is a sucker play. If you're playing Settle the Wreckage, you are hoping your opponent is not smart enough to make educated attacks and basically force you to play that in a disadvantageous situation. They can force you to hold up your mana, not get the most out of your mana on a turn cycle, and then they decide what creatures they give you when you're forced to pull the trigger on it. The more I watch Standard, the more I'm thinking Settle the Wreckage is a sucker card to put in your deck.
I think it was definitely the right card to play at the very beginning of the format with those control decks, but I think you're absolutely right. When you're attacking with three and four creatures at a time into four untapped mana on the other side, two of which are white, you're just asking to get blown out. That's just the way it goes. And I think people have learned that. They realize how ridiculous Settle can be. And if you make good attacks and they're having to spend four to take care of one, maybe two attackers, they're definitely going to be behind. And even for a control deck, it's going to take them a while to build back up.
Sean, I agree with that 100% of what you just said. The only thing I don't like about that, I guess, that mentality or that style of play is that it disproportionately puts the green decks, the large green decks, at a disadvantage. And I say that because you're putting out Carnage Tyrant or Gishath or any of the other, you know, kind of big giant creatures. You even can go, you know, you can go in with smart attacks here, but it's like, okay, I put I have two different giant creatures. I'll attack in for one. It's supposed to be extremely resilient. Yes, it is four mana for one creature, but it's, you know, a Steel Leaf Champion or something like that, where it's just a giant creature and you're not attacking in for one with your Land War Elves or, you know, anything, or like a small Jade Light Ranger, like a 2/1 Jade Light Ranger. I think that's the only issue with that card or that line of play, is that I really do think it disproportionately puts the big green decks at a disadvantage.
Yeah, we'll see how the format continues to shake out and whether or not there's going to be a meta move in control that lasts for more than a couple of tournaments. The SCG Invitational went down this week in Roanoke. 357 competitors. Guys, I'm going to do the compliment sandwich. Modern and Standard featured in a tournament in which you had to master both to get to a top eight, which featured Modern. Aaron Barich took it all down. He played Infect in Modern and Mono Red in Standard. Barich, a known lover of aggressive strategies. He took down Zach Elsick, who lived his nightmare on camera for all to see in the finals, playing Kark Clan Ironworks against Infect. He was on blue-white gifted Standard. Elsick had an absolutely fantastic weekend. No worries that he got rolled by a horrible metagame matchup in that finals with Aaron Barich. Congratulations, Aaron Barich, the SCG Invitational Champion. I am more than a little disappointed with one top eight competitor, and that is the well-known Gerard Fabiano. He didn't have more spice. Usually, Fabiano is known for brewing something up, playing something a little bit off the deep end, something that he and he alone knows. And I love watching him for that. He played Esper Control in Standard, which seemed to be the deck of the weekend in Standard, and Jeskai Control in Modern. Gerard, I want to see something spicier from you. I'll look for it next time I follow you, as I do each and every time you play, with great interest. And finally, before we get to the decks, I want to throw out a congratulations to one of the players from my LGS, Devin Beeston, up-and-comer a couple years ago at our LGS, now definitively the best player in our community. Coming into the Invitational weekend, he was ranked 24th on the SCG leaderboard. That's 24th overall. He had a disappointing weekend, finished with just 9 points, but he is a young man who has dedicated his time, has put in the practice time, and earned every spot that he's moved up that leaderboard. He deserves to have his name out there. Many people now are starting to talk about, when is he going to catch that break? When is he going to break through? And we might see him on the Pro Tour. So, Devin, we follow you with great interest. Congratulations on everything you've achieved so far. We look forward to you taking the next step and taking Q-Town to the next Pro Tour that you get the opportunity to qualify for. Guys, the way you break down the Invitationals, it's a mixed format. So it's great just like a pro tour, to look at decks that were kind of X-ing better on the weekend. Decks that were 7-1 or better in standard or modern is where I kind of want to focus on this to see if there's any tech. Let's start with standard because that's where we just were in Copenhagen. Esper Control had 3 decks go 7-1 or better, 3 out of the 9 decks that were able to achieve that. Blue-White Control had 1. Esper Midrange, which I want to talk about in a moment, and then Red-Black Mid, Red-Black Aggro, Black-White Midrange, and Blue-Black Midrange. Brian, you mentioned whether or not Esper is where you wanted to be, and you mentioned the particular build of Wafo Tapa with Gear Hulk and Fatal Push and things like Vraska's Contempt. These Esper Control decks that were prevalent at the SCG Invitational were just splashing white. They were just the barest white, mostly for Teferi and maybe a couple of sideboard cards. But these are hard blue-black control decks, whether it's a lot of counter spells or the use of Fatal Push along with Vraska's Contempt. But they brought back some other old tech in the Scarab God to look to go long in these games. And then you had the Esper Midrange deck, which was just strictly Esper good cards. It didn't have necessarily a control bent. Yes. It was just, is this a good card in black, blue, or white? Yes, in the deck. Doesn't matter what the mana cost on it was, it seemed. That looked like a deck I would love to play because the curve started at 4 and went to 6. Like, that's the
yes.
kind of magic I like
hey,
to play
hey,
in
you
standard.
Had 6 knights in there, too, so.
This was an interesting situation in which we find ourselves. Is it good enough just to be a good anti-aggro cards deck? Or is it time to look at a bigger overall philosophy? And is it time to really get away from the white and make it the little brother splash color, so to speak, so that you can get Teferi? Because Teferi's excellent, but it turns out that maybe just straight blue-white doesn't have the support that it needs every time against this field of aggression.
The Esper does bring more to the table. You've got Essence Extraction. You've got Moment of Craving. Those are the things that support Fatal Push and Vraska's Contempt as your primary removals that white really couldn't do. The Seal Aways, you know, there was still a chance you could get it back and things. These are just hard answers to the red aggro deck. And so as long as red is putting up the numbers that it's putting up in either the red or the red flame or the red black iteration, I think you do want black, Sean, as you said earlier. This is the color that is going to take care of a lot of the menace for you. Going forward, is this one of those things where you want to then, it can be moved a little bit? Of course, I saw a lot of Gontis in the sideboard, and I think that was to hedge against probably the hard blue-white control or the approach cards, you know, the approach builds. That's a card that I think is fascinating. Argwell's Bloodfast, one of my favorites out of the board in a lot of these. I think that's just an absolute way to gain some card advantage. So black to me seems really, really strong. I would not have said that a week, maybe even 5-6 days ago, but this weekend really solidified that I think the Esper control lists are far and away better than just the straight blue-white control.
Matt, as I was watching these decks with Scarab God pop up and do well, the meme that was running through my head was at the end of Khan's block, when everybody forgot about Siege Rhino, and then Siege Rhino busted back on everybody in the last couple of months, and there were all the memes with Siege Rhino and pictures and forgot about me, didn't you? Like, Scarab God kind of getting the same treatment right now. People wrote him off entirely just 6-8 weeks ago, and now Scarab God seems to be the answer that these decks are leaning on again here at the end of the format.
I don't think he's as powerful as he once was. He used to be, you know, king of standard. I mean, there's no question there. As a finisher, as a one of or two of in a lot of these decks, I totally understand that. These decks need a powerful, resilient mana sink, something that's difficult to deal with and attacks the metagame on a different axis, which is, you know, accessing the graveyard of your opponent essentially most of the time. We also noticed, I don't know, Sean, did you notice the Liliana Death's Majesties running around as well with the Ravenous Chupacabras?
Ravenous Chupacabra, and you have plenty of things that were throwbacks to the old sort of Reanimator blue-black deck that was hot for a quick minute. You had Champion of Wits. You had a number of other things the blue-black deck can throw into the graveyard and then get back for an incremental advantage later. I was really enjoying the Death Majesty sort of revival alongside Scarab God.
I believe Emma Handy Hand had that as well, along with JD and Clomperins. We do have to talk about one big elephant in the room, I guess you want to talk about on the standard side, What do you guys think of that Abzan Angels deck?
Kaji Negri kind of broke it open, I think, with that. That looked like a really cool deck. I don't know if it's got the legs in the metagame, but mad props to him for bringing something to the battlefield that's as cool as that was. It just looked really like an Abzan good stuff deck, but any time that you've got Angel of Sanctions in a deck, I can get behind that. It looked really cool with the Rishkars. The Thrashing Brontodons I thought was a great choice, and then backed up with, like, you know, Vraska Relic Seeker. That seemed really good. So the mana base was a little wonky, only 24 lands. That seems kind of low for as much of the double colors as you need in that, but seemed really strong, just couldn't get there.
To me, this was Shalai plus other late game cards, because she makes your opponent play the game in a certain way and take certain steps once she comes down, that you cut off all their other possible moves of interaction until that one bridge is crossed. And that gives the Shalai player knowledge on how the next couple turns are going to go. So I thought it was genius to leverage that. And then you get the Vraska Relic Seekers. You get the other late game cards to go with it. I think this is going to have some legs going forward. Is this its final form? No, absolutely not. But I think this strategy is going to be viable.
I'm curious about those Heart of Kirin's. I didn't get to see this deck get played much, but those Heart of Kirin's just kind of seem a little, I wouldn't call them out of place, but they're just odd. You know, maybe you're crewing it with your Angel of Sanctions or your Thrashing Brontodon before you sacrifice it, I guess. And that's one card that stuck out that I was like, okay, I'm not exactly sure where this fits. Now, I do think that Aethersphere Harvester fits extremely well in this deck. Yeah, no, I thought this deck was pretty freaking sweet, and I've seen it running around on Magic Online. I just didn't know if it had legs, and, you know, for taking 14th place, I mean, I would say even though he did very well in Modern, that's a pretty good finish.
Those are the 7-1 or better decks in Standard. Next weekend is GP Vegas. It's going to be a limited GP and a Modern GP. So the decks that went 7-1 and better in Modern at the SCG Invitational, probably going to be on everybody's radar, guys. Black Red Hollow One, Infect, of course, that was the champs deck, Aaron Barrage. Mardu Pyromancer had two decks that went 7-1 or better, as did Green Tron, Jeskai Control, and one Jund deck. Does any one of these stick out, or is this still just, as Todd Anderson said, it's a joke, kind of like Modern?
Yeah, I heard that, and I was dying laughing. I mean, you've got your standard mono green Tron, you know, your Mardu decks. I didn't even really notice any quote unquote innovations. Some people are putting in Anguish Unmakings. I noticed there was one in the sideboard hiding out there. Molten Rains in the sideboard. I will tell you, I don't think any of them could have beat mono blue Steel Stompy. I would have destroyed all of them. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Well, with that deviation from reality aside, Brian, the more that we've tested a little bit of Modern, and I see it in your hands as well as in the hands of players who are routinely top eighting with it, in a format that's credited for being entirely wide open, everything is powerful, play what you know, play what you think gives you the best chance to win, I think slowly but surely there might be a contender bubbling up for best deck in the format. And that's Mardu Pyromancer. It continues to look great at every turn.
It looks great unless you're playing against Kark Clan Ironworks, which that was just an awful. Joe Stempo, I felt bad for him. He was playing that deck so well this weekend and then got paired with that in the top eight and just could not find anything. It was a terrible matchup. But no, I think you're probably right. Mardu Pyromancer, from my experience, limitedly playing it, this has slowly become that Modern deck that I think I'm going to keep built for quite some time. I'm kind of notorious for playing a deck and then maybe ripping it apart a couple weeks later and putting something else together. This is one of those I could see coming back to just because it's got such good play patterns to it. It can go deep into games. It can close quickly depending on your draws. And the other thing about it is the sideboard is so versatile. You've got so many different things that you can kind of transform into. You can become very aggro with like a Goblin Rabble Master package. You can become more controlling if that's possible, putting down the hammer with like Surgical Extractions, with some Wear Tear, with some Comballs. It's a really, really good deck against so much of the field, and it's got a lot of fun play patterns to it. don't like getting beaten down by like six sixes, by God, you know, nine tokens do 9 points of damage. So I'm on board with anything that Young Pyromancer can crank out along with Lingering Souls any day.
We'll see if these decks are the ones to beat in the room at GP Vegas this weekend. That was the SCG Invitational. Congratulations again to Aaron Barich. Entertaining weekend. He lost his first match of the tournament and then didn't lose the rest of the weekend. That is a heck of a run to go on. Matt, what other highlights were there? Because this was more than an Invitational. SCG, Star City Games, really kind of broke the mold and made this their own convention. And they put together everything from sanctioned vintage to unsanctioned no ban list modern. There were a lot of other highlights in the room.
There was. And I'll tell you what, we discussed this a little bit before the show. There was so much going on. They should have had a second stream. I mean, they should have had two streams, one for the main event, one for whatever ridiculous side thing was going on, which there was a lot of ridiculousness in the room.
There was.
One of the most ridiculous was no ban list modern. Honestly, I think they thought it up back when Standard was stale and people were like, all right, what are we doing here? 207 players. Briar took down BBD in the finals. He was running colorless Eldrazi. There was a lot of Eldrazi in the room. Some Eldrazi post, some black-green depths. There was a lot of Eldrazi from what I've seen, though, and a lot of Jits as well. Jitte was pretty powerful in this format. Congratulations to Aiden for beating Miracles, Old School Miracles with Jace, Monastery Mentor, and Top with Counterbalance. Hell of a run by BBD as well, going through all of those colorless Eldrazi and punishing Jun, things like that. Another one we had, Vintage Power 9 Series. Andy Marketon took down Eric Merrick with, of course, Shops. They had a great breakdown on the stream from Steven Menendian that basically, you know, he ran down, hey, here's what vintage is, here's what you need to do. And so you had your two top two were Shops. Third place, though, was Paradoxical Outcome Storm and then Grixis Thieves with Jeskai Control rounding out the fourth and fifth. This was your typical vintage, although you didn't see as many Oath decks in the room as in the past. But Shops was all over, 124 players for 13 rounds. It's a lot of vintage people. Legacy Duel for Duels, 187 players for 13 rounds. I believe this was one that was $100 to enter, and then you got a full set of duels to take it down. Kevin King took it down with Grixis Delver beating Grant Paris on Storm. And then you had a really interesting deck that I want to discuss with actually you, Brian. Abzan Maverick in third. This kind of looked like shove all the good cards into one deck, you know, let's go with it type of thing. But it seemed to work out. And I mean, it even had doozies like Scribranger in it. Brian, did you see this played or did you actually have a chance to look over this deck list at all?
Abzan Maverick, Scribranger.
Yep.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. Well, hey, anything that's protection from blue, I think, is a pretty good card that you can go into any Legacy event for. The thing that always gets me about Maverick, how many one-ofs there are. You know, one Kasali Pride Mage, one Ramunab Excavator, one Scavenging, one Scrib Ranger, one Tireless Tracker, etc. It really is like a toolbox kind of deck, and then you can kind of, you know, sideboard into something a little bit better after this. So, no, these are the kinds of decks that give people fits all the time because it can come at you from so many different angles. I love the Titania, Protector of Argoth. That card, if it can hit the battlefield, just does absolutely bonker things. And then, of course, having the taxing effects of like a Gaddock Teague and a Thalia. Yeah, I really like this list. This looks really great. So congrats to Robert Boyer on third place finish for that.
Sean, I know you've probably looked at this list. Did you also notice they had a Dark Depths combo with Gaia's Cradle in it? Have you ever seen anything like that in Legacy? Because I love this list. I think it's amazing.
I have been accused of a great many people of basically Frankensteining my decks together, which is taking one deck over here and another deck over here and then somehow jamming them into just kind of one deck together. And that's
yeah, you've done that. Don't say that you've been accused of it.
That's a fact.
I'll tell you where this all started in my mind. When we didn't have Modern yet, but we had Extended, and Jerry Thompson put together Thopter Depths. To me, that was the beginning of sort of mashing these two great flavors together and making something that is hard to interact with on the same axis. He was so good at it with that deck that he got pieces of it banned. All right. It was outlawed in that format. But his legacy is taking anything that seems disparate, but you find some overlaps that work on different angles, but you find a way to sort of stitch it all together in one deck. And that's what this reminds me of, because it's got different attack angles, because it can do different things. It's hard to answer the entirety of the key pieces of the deck with the same piece of sideboard tech, and it starts to stretch your sideboard slots. So I like it on that angle. Is it going to be there going forward? Yeah, we'll see if this ends up being adopted. But I like what they were trying to do by putting this together.
You've got a ton of ways to pull just your one-ofs out. You know, you've got Green Sun Zenith in there, four of them. And, yeah, Titania in a non-Nykvit shell. I'm just like, okay, I feel like this guy like had like four half-built decks and just put them all into one deck and called it a day. But you know what? Congratulations, Robert. Hell of a run. Glad to see that somebody's still got a little bit of innovation within Legacy. Did you guys notice anything else between the no ban list and Power 9? Sean, did you see anything between those two, particularly no ban list, that really said, ooh, that's interesting?
You mentioned it earlier, the play of BBD, the ability to put together a control deck and make it work in a format in which it was going to be hard to guess the number, density, and types of aggression that would be brought to bear. Now, when you get things like top plus counterbalance, and one of the cards that you didn't mention, but I know you were thinking of, Mental Misstep. That solves so many problems with just one card. And people have been talking about, well, Teferi. Teferi's better than Jace. Teferi's better than Jace in the watered-down world in which he lives. When you take the shackles off and you can play the real power around Jace, Jace is so far ahead. And BBD showed everybody that with his performance this weekend. It was a wild experiment. I know that Mox Boarding House on the West Coast has these kinds of events as well. I was a little bit disappointed that there wasn't a little bit more information. The Eldrazi deck essentially had the GP winning list from before the bans that you could just go copy, and everybody knew that it was going to be fantastically powerful. That's the reason it was banned. So I was hoping to see a few more things. I was hoping to see a fully powered red-blue Wizards deck with Adelies, plus Delver of Secrets, plus Storm Chaser Mage with Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time and Ponder. I thought that was maybe the way I would go just to have some fun with this. But I think it was a fun exercise, and its story won't be written until there's some trickle-down technology that comes from it. You might not be able to play the same cards, but without your opponent having such powerful answers, maybe you don't need to do the most powerful thing, and you can still figure out something that's better to do with the cards that are available. So we'll see if a couple of new color combinations start to break out a little bit just based on the relevant legal playables that were showcased over the weekend.
Brian, what about you? Did you notice anything between those three? I'm going to call them the weirdo tournaments, but between those three tournaments, did you notice anything that just jumped off the page?
One of the things that I thought was absolutely fascinating, because my knowledge of Vintage is so slim, was you hit it right on the head. The coverage and the discussion about the Vintage tournament prior to it happening, I thought was fantastic. I thought it just was really, really great. I had no idea that Paradoxical Outcome was as popular and as terrifying in Vintage as it could be. But of course, yes, that would be a deck that I would be horrified at playing as well. The Mentor deck seems to be kind of the big shift. Are you playing a Shops deck? Are you playing a Mentor deck? The Outcome Mentor, piloted by Jonathan Leon. I got to see this a little bit, and boy, there is a lot going on in this that looks like it was doing a ton of stuff. It really was a Paradoxical Outcome deck with Mentor and Blightsteel Colossus as the win condition, and it was really, really cool to see this. So getting your hands on this level of power, I think, would be really, really fun. From the no banless Modern, I was a little disappointed to see so many colorless Eldrazi decks just kind of run through a lot of the other decks and some of the innovations and things. But yeah, I think Sean's right. Jace in that Miracles with the Dig Through Time and Sensei's Divining Top, there is no question you want Jace 10 times out of 10 in that matchup. If he has all of the cards around him, it's not even a contest. Teferi's really good, and I'm glad we have a little break from, you know, another Jace kind of dominating the world. But man, oh man, that deck looked so good. I would say it was in game three of the finals. He cast a dig through time and just whiffed, just absolutely whiffed. And it was one of those things where, you know, you're just kind of like, well, that happens sometimes. And I think he had a search for Ezcanta and found like four lands as well, something like that. It was just terrible back-to-back stuff that just hardly would ever happen to somebody like BBD, it seems like. So I loved all of the different shenanigans going on this weekend. I hope they do it again. And I would definitely love to make a trip, maybe a tryhards trip out to SCGCon in the future.
Can't see a world that this doesn't happen again next year. This was a huge success for them.
Yeah.
And it was just blowing up social media as well. I got to give props to Cedric as well, because he was there with the quick wit on Twitter. You know, like when BBD whiffed twice, he goes, oh, yeah, Dig Through Time's a totally fair Magic card. We should never have banned it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We'll see where this goes in the future. There was so much fun had, and Matt, you're right. Huge success for SCG over the weekend, welcoming so many diverse portions of the Magic community in, whether it was the Power 9 Vintage, the Duel for Duels in Legacy. Pauper had its own event over the weekend. I know there were panels going on that were sold out. They were running out of chairs for different formats. These kinds of events where it's more than just a tournament are definitely the future. Wizards has tried this a bit with GPs to make them into more than just the main event, but these convention-style settings, I think, may be the future of what we see on quite a few weekends in the Magic landscape going forward. That brings us up to this week's news. M19 is suddenly breaking across our bows. It's like the big roller wave that we didn't see, and here it comes crashing in. Spoilers have already started, and Blake Rasmussen threw a whole bunch of stuff at the community earlier today on the mothership. Let's start with, guys, they're going to continue the buy a box promo. Wizards had already mentioned this. If you buy a box of M19, you're going to get a Nexus of Fate. It's got some pretty cool Sarkhan art as he's heading into a mystical cave. It's a blue card, and for 5+2 blue instant speed, you'll be able to take an extra turn after this one. Now, usually for sorcery speed, 5 is the number for taking an extra turn. They're going to make take an extra turn an instant. I'll be interested to see if this gets any standard play because of that. And it has an additional line of text that may be important. If Nexus of Fate would be put into the graveyard from anywhere, reveal Nexus of Fate and, no, not exile it, shuffle it into its owner's library instead. So this kind of flies in the face of some of the templating that we've seen lately. Matt, is this going to already break the mold of supposedly unplayable standard cards being buy-a-box promos?
I don't think it's going to break the mold of them being playable in standard as much as I think it's going to be you're going to want it in other formats, mainly EDH. And getting this card kind of says, maybe I should pre-order a box from my LGS, because anything that says take a turn, even though, yes, it's 7 mana, anything that says take an additional turn automatically kind of has people's ears perking up. So there might be enough of them now that it exists now that it's not going to break anything. And it is 7 mana, so I don't think there's a world where you're going to play this in standard, but definitely tone the line a little bit. But you know what? Let them have their experiment. If it blows up in their face, it blows up in their face.
All right. The next thing that really caught my eye was the store championship card. Now, this is technically still the Dominaria store championship, but when you participate in it, you will be getting a Corset 2019 promo card, and that promo card is Demon of Catastrophes. Now, as the show's resident Demon Master, I feel like it's my bailiwick to go over this one. Demon of Catastrophes, 2 generic and 2 black mana, so the standard for modern era demon cards with a drawback. It is a 6/6, which has become the standard power and toughness. It has a couple of ability keywords, flying and trample, frankly, the two that you would want in this situation. And its quote-unquote drawback, as an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice another creature. We're in an era with tokens. We're in an era where there are often beneficial, sacrificial outlets. Sacrifice another creature doesn't seem like much of a drawback with Demon of Catastrophes. This gets the official, hold on, let me lick it and put it on there. This gets the Sean seal of approval, Brian.
Yeah, this card looks really good. And when I first saw the artwork, it really did remind me of Juzam Jin.
Mm-hmm.
With the two black and two other. And I was just like, wow, they are hearkening back to this. And I think it
the
looks
horns
perfect
on
for
it.
Especially
with, oh, yeah.
Yeah, with the 25 symbol on it. That mm-hmm. It just looks really, really great. You know, you got the gigantic demon, the tiny little person in his hand, mm-hmm. just like Juzam. So I think this has to be a hearkening back to that. This is a real Magic card. Like you said, there's a ton of ways to get small things onto the battlefield. And by turn four, if this is what you're doing, and all you have to do is sacrifice like a 0/1 cleric of like the Rites of Belzenlok, okay, that seems okay. And then you get Belzenlok pretty soon after that. Yeah, that seems like a pretty good beating to me.
If you're a standard Showdown player, at the end of July, they're going to rotate the lands that you get in your standard Showdown boosters. Now, the lands have always been pretty cool in these, but the new art looks like a throwback to the early days of Magic. And I love the art on these new standard Showdown lands between Demon of Catastrophes, between the feel of the new basic lands that you're picking up. This all seems to be tying in artistically with Magic's 25th anniversary celebration this year. I think this is just another home run.
Oh, I agree with you on the land, Sean. I alluded to this earlier about blue stompy steel deck and modern. I've been like, what islands do I want to put in there? Because it runs like 18 islands. I've been playing it on Moto for last couple weeks. And you guys can probably watch me tomorrow night stream it. It's a doozy of a deck. And these lands harken back to early lands where it's just simple. I wouldn't say simple art, but it's iconic art, I almost feel like. And these look amazing. And this may be my land pick for those. As far as the Demon Catastrophes and that promo, I'm sorry. I think this may be the finisher that the green-black Saperlein decks are looking for. Sacking a Saperlein seems totally fine to me. Another card that I think in the short term is going to see play with this, Hostile Desert from Our Devastation. Because if you top deck this Demon Catastrophe late in the game, I like having a Hostile Desert or one or two of in the deck. And basically you just sacrifice a land, a 3/4, to sacrifice it to Demon of Catastrophes. Both of these, the standard Showdown pack lands, amazing. They knocked out of the park again. The Demon of Catastrophe with that, like you said, Brian, that 25 in the corner, freaking sweet. What do you guys think of the rest of the promos? I mean, they just gave us so much information today on Monday the 11th.
Yeah, the playmat I'm fascinated by because I think they've done a great job of making it maybe Nicol Bolas, maybe Ugin, or maybe they can just kind of say, no, no, it's just some normal dragon, you know, whatever. I'll be curious to get to the bottom of this one. The playmat is very, very cool. It's a little scary, you know, for me. The other promo cards I'm very excited about. Gutter Snipe is such a great card, and I love the artwork on
the
this.
Art is
art
baller
one.
On that.
Yeah, that
oh,
is.
Oh, it is so great. The huge bulbous nose on that thing. It's like they took the original artwork and then just said, no, we can do better. We can do absolutely better. So, yeah, this one is definitely going to replace the old Gutter Snipes that I've got. I'll have to get my hands on these. And the card Desecrated Tomb, the release weekend, this is the card for 3. Ever one or more creature cards leave your graveyard, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. What have we seen bats as tokens before? I mean, it's been so long. This seems really cool for a little bit of, you know, what's the payoff now for graveyard hate? If you've got something leaving the graveyard, you know, hey, you're going to get a 1/1 token for your troubles. So overall, the artwork looks amazing. I'm really excited to see the full spoiler list. And guys, you know, we've got some vested interest in this. This is the set that we are going to be playing and drafting and sealed at the GP in Minneapolis in nigh a month from now. So I think we've definitely got to do our homework on this set.
It'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds with the new core set, Magic 19, coming up. There is one thing, and check out Blake's article from early this week, Packaging, Promos, and More on the Mothership, to see all of the fantastic artwork and to see a preview of each and every card. We're not going to run down each one of them. We usually don't talk too much about speculation and packaging, but they put it at such a focal point in this article. I think it's interesting. The packaging indicates that our new 5 Planeswalker lineup is going to have quite the shimmy to the left of the old Gatewatch. It seems to be a Johnny for white, Tezzeret for blue, Liliana for black, Sarkhan for red. He's been gone for a hot second. And a brand new Planeswalker, Vivian Reed, for green. Now, we'll get in and do a whole bunch of breakdowns. I don't want to get into Vivian Reed and everything she might mean at this moment. We'll get into that next week when we do a preview of our preview card here on Try Cards. That's right. Matt, you did the legwork to secure this, so you're going to get to do the reveal next week. So join us for our preview card, and we'll be talking about spoilers as part of M19 next week. What does this say to you? Are we looking at a chapter sort of away from the Gatewatch after all this buildup? Is it time to get back to some other faces? You obviously have to renew your marketing at some point. Are we seeing that right now with this set?
I think they realized that core sets were the easy way to put in new cards, reprints that didn't necessarily fit into the story. I think we're going to have similar kind of like what we did with Battle Bond, where we may have a 1 or 2 week story, you know, just kind of explaining the background, you know, here it is. These are going to tie into other, I'm not going to call them other planes, but other storylines. And it's just going to be a continuation. We kind of know this already because the Nexus of Fate is actually Sarkhan going into Ugin's tomb, you know, when he went back in time and changed everything. I mean, we've got Reliquary Tower. That's kind of a blast of the past. I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, that this Ajani is actually Ajani Vengeant, because that would be pretty awesome. I love Ajani Vengeant. But no, I don't think this is going to be storyline as much as like needed reprints, standard reprints. And who knows, maybe in standard, we might actually see Liliana the Veil. I don't know. I think she still might be a little powerful for the formats, but she may also be, you know, kind of with all the tokens running around, maybe be a tad underpowered, because especially with like glory bringing in the short term. So I don't know how they're going to go about this, but it looks like they're just putting in new cards and reprinting some cards that are needed in standard without much of a storyline or without much of a regard about the Gatewatch or anything like that.
Brian, when I saw all this, it occurred to me who was getting the short end of the handle on the axe again, and that's Garruk. Where is Garruk? Has he been written out of the situation? I mean, with Nissa taking over the green Planeswalker role, and it seems like blasts from the past for the other colors, but green gets a brand new Planeswalker. Garruk, it's just suddenly not cool.
Garruk smash! Garruk smash creature, Garruk smash Planeswalker. And, you know, it's 2018. I guess that's just not cool anymore. We have to have the thinking persons, Planeswalkers. This does kind of look like a shift where this is not just straightforward abilities. We've had different versions of Tezzeret that have done some things, obviously, artifact-related and that kind of tangential blue idea. We've got some things with Sarkhan that we've seen that in a couple of different colors, and you know that looks really, really interesting to take on that. I'll be curious to see how Vivian Reed plays into all of this, but I love Garruk. I would love to see another Garruk back. I don't think we've seen the last of him by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe it just didn't fit right in with the others that we've seen.
I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I really think he's going to show up in the third Ravnica block when they're getting ready to defeat Nicol Bolas, and he's just going to come in and destroy face as far as Nicol Bolas. That's my completely speculative guess on what's happening with Garruk right now. He's just out there hunting Planeswalkers, and Nicol Bolas is on top of his list now.
Hot takes with Matthew take Early.
Right. I'm going to say, do you want to write like some intro music for him to come into? I mean, you're...
Yeah, oh my gosh. if he says, oh yeah, right before he chops Nicol Bolas in half.
All right,
we'll see where this goes. You're called shot here from Matt Hurley on Tryhards how the Gatewatch will destroy Nicol Bolas. All their plans are for naught. Just going to run in at the last second, and Garruk chops him in half. That's Matt's way to finish the story here on Tryhards. All right, coming up next week, we'll get into M19, including the Tryhards preview card. Won't you join us for that? Until then, how about a ride in the elevator, Matt? Why do you have an angry Minotaur in there with you?
Anger at the Flame Chain is about a $455 card right now. This card is a very powerful 5-drop. Fits well against Teferis of the World and also against the Karns of the World. I think once the rotation happens, could be a Planeswalker that's in. Pick up a playset of them, throw them in your binder, and you won't have to pay the ridiculous price that they will be, you know, $10, $12 later next year. So pick them up, trade for them, do what you need to do, and just get a playset so you have them.
Angrath the Flame Chain, this week's In the Elevator, here on Tryhards. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew. Well, the brewmaster has been hard at work. I wonder what he has for us this week.
This week, we are taking a little step back in time to a time of Avacyn, and this is not one of Hurley's favorite cards, but I am very, very interested in this legendary artifact, Hellvolt. 3 for 1 and tap it, you can exile target creature you control. 7 and tap it, exile target creature you don't control. And when Hellvolt is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return all cards exiled with it to the battlefield under their owner's control. Hurley, there are so many different tools you can do with this card. I feel like it's just like a brewer's paradise right here. I understand that you might not be so sympathetic to the Hellvolt, but give me your best take on Hellvolt and why we shouldn't brew with it.
Well, this is an EDH All-Star, and I'll tell you, there's a very selfish reason I don't like this card, and that's because this was right around the time when they had the Hellvolt giant display that you opened up, and certain stores got, you know, like the demonic tutors and all that nonsense, and then you had like the double-sided foil tokens. The store I was playing at, which some of the people listening will probably know which store that was, I did not distribute these fairly at all, and I didn't get the shaft, but there were several other players that got the shaft. So every time I look at the Hellvolt, I think of that experience, and it's ridiculous, I know, but it's a completely irrational dislike of the card. So that out of the way, EDH All-Star, activate 7 is just a bit much. If it had activate 1, exile target creature you control without a tap, then this card would be broken beyond broken. I've been playing the, like I mentioned earlier, the Blue Steel deck. This is like your Grand Architect where you're making a bunch of mana for artifacts and you're going into big creatures. I'm running God Pharaoh's Gift in that, which, you know, basically brings all my creatures back. And I can usually cast it turn 3 without too much of an issue. I've been experimenting with the Hellvolt. I think if you're able to create a decent amount of mana and you can take these small incremental creatures off the board to protect against board wipes, because that's the biggest problem I've been having with this deck, is that I play out my hand, I have my entire hand played out, you know, 3, 4, 5 drops within 3 or 4 turns, I get it down to about 6 life, 5 life, and I've got some reach tools in there, but it seems like, you know, like I just go to a board wipe and then we get stalled out and I go into top deck mode. Like I said, I've actually tested with this, and this is a modern deck, I've tested with this to be able to exile, you know, at the end of turn, exile like a 1-1 that doesn't really matter. And then once the actual cards leave the battlefield, I've got to figure out a way to sacrifice this. That's part of the issue. I just can't figure out a way to sacrifice it easily so that I can bring my cards back. So this is great for Wrath protection, but you need a way to sacrifice your own artifacts to get rid of this. And I think that's what's missing within my Blue Steel deck. You're not running enough creatures or anything to run it in like a KCI style deck. Maybe you could be running as a one of a protect against spot removal with it, with your scrap heap or whatever those are, the scrap yards or that 3-drop that it uses. I'm not sure, but I think this is going to be an artifact themed deck, and it's going to be purely for Wrath protection and protection of vital creatures that either give you a combo or give you that reach once a Wrath has actually hit the board, which in modern is typically Supreme Verdict. So then you can't counter it. You can't regenerate, or you can regenerate your creatures, but there's really no easy way to do that within the artifacts. So I do think this has a place within modern. It's just, it's waiting for that final deck to say, okay, hey, here it goes, and then I've got a sack out for it.
Whew. Boy, that was a long one.
I've actually tested with this in the last 2 weeks. That's the crazy part.
Wow, that was a lot. Sean, what about you? Hellvolt, you going to be able to match Hurley's screed on that?
A little look behind the curtain. Before editing, Matt took 6 minutes to give us his opinion. This is supposed to be a total of a 3-minute segment where we each get 1 minute So I'm half tempted to put in like a little counter that counts how many times I have to loop the bed just so that we can continue to run it under what Matt said each time. All right, let me not take up that much time. Hell Vault, a slightly, and I mean slightly better, Sorrow's Path. If you don't know that card, kids, ask your grandparents about it. Wasn't good. Continues to be one of the worst cards from the dark. And that's saying something. So I just don't think there's going to be anywhere for this to go. As we see more and more artifacts leak into Modern, a Braid is going to surely follow. The worst thing you could do is play this and get zero value from it at all, where it actually becomes a mana deficit. I just think it's too pricey for a format as powerful as Modern.
I think that's true. In Modern, for sure. Hurley, I love the fact that you're trying to test with this in Modern. I think that's absolutely phenomenal, because that just sounds like exactly what you should be doing with your spare time, of course. This card appeals to me because it's kind of like a protection. You know, you can exile your own creature for a very low mana cost. I don't think three's too ridiculous to ask for in Modern and casting an artifact, but to maybe take your creature out of someone's path range, to get your creature out of Vraska's contempt range, whatever it's going to be in Modern, I feel like that is something that can be beneficial, because you can just kind of hide it in the Hell Vault, and then in your own good time, through a wear tear, through some other way, get that creature back. I don't know. It's got some things. I can't imagine activating 7 and tapping it to exile another creature very often. But to me, the protection part of this is fascinating. So somebody out there needs to break Hell Vault.
The summer home for our Lord and Savior Gristlebrand, the Hell Vaults. This week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Try Hard. Matt, we already know what you did to get better at Magic this week, so I'm going to skip you. No, I'm just kidding. What did you do to get better at Magic this week?
I learned that my two co-hosts worship a false idol, because if you actually look behind the Hell Vault in the picture, you see the Silver Moon, which is actually where our Lord and Savior lives. Get that one right, you two. I played a little bit of Modern, played some Battle Bond. I'm actually starting to ramp up a little bit on talking and testing for our trip. I'm super excited for this 2019 core set. I think it's going to be a very even, probably the most even playing field we could probably get, because typically you don't have ridiculous bombs, just out of control bombs within this where you pull it and you win type of thing. Playing a little Modern, to have a little Modern deck when I go up to the trip, and that is what I'm doing to get better, because I'm super excited about this GP.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun going up to Minneapolis. I didn't get to play any Magic this week, but theorizing is often good as an outlet to think about what's powerful. If you get the opportunity, take a look at what happened on day 3 of the SCG Con between the Invitational Top 8 and the No Ban List Modern Top 8. Cedric Phillips led his panelists in a discussion of what might be due to come off the ban list for Modern, what might need to be put on the ban list for Modern, and why those things may or may not be too powerful for the format. Now, agree or disagree with them, it's the process of thinking about what's powerful that can often lead you to new discoveries in a format or a new tweak for your deck. So think about what's powerful in a format. And if you get the opportunity, I'd say it went about 25 minutes or so. Watch that. It's essentially a visual version of a podcast discussing what's good enough, too good, or shouldn't even be, according to their opinion, on the Modern ban list. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Been so not able to play Magic for such a long time now, and I kind of go through these periods of beating myself up and like, oh god, I got nothing to bring to the cast again, etc., which I know is probably the same old sad story. And yet when I saw everybody having so much fun at SCG Con this weekend, I'm still invested in the game. These people went and were invested in the game, and they brought their decks that they wanted to win. I'm not saying that they just were all smiles all the time, especially BBD in that finals. Boy, he looked ticked. But, you know, they put in the work and got to play the greatest game that we know. To me, that's kind of where I am Magic. I don't always get to play it as much as I want to, but it's still so much fun. It's fun to watch. It's fun to talk about. It's fun to look at new cards. It's fun to build. It's fun to test. It's fun to help people out by loaning cards. And just having that resource at my disposal where I can kind of turn to it and kind of, you know, it fills those minutes of my day. it becomes a focus at times, or I just completely forget about it. And I think that's the great thing about it. That's going to be my mentality going up to Minneapolis. I'm just looking forward to having a great time. They're hoping to do well, of course, but I'm really looking forward to having the fun part of Magic occupy my weekend.
You know, if you ever don't have time to form an opinion for the show, Matt will just do a 12-minute, 3 minutes to brew segment, and then we won't have to worry about it. So
it's a guideline, not a rule. That's how I live my life.
All right. Those stop signs with the white borders, totally optional. You heard it here first from Matt on Try Hards. We do have to give Matt credit, though. Matt did a lot of the legwork in order to get us the preview card that we're going to get to share with you next week here on Try Hards. It is from the upcoming M19, and it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about not only the card, but also the effect that it may have on the format as it's going to be going forward. Won't you see us next week when we share our preview card with you? Until then, oh, you brave soul, may you always look forward and do it with us here on Try Hards.